Born this week, on the 4th of May, 1963, four goals from the head of Eddie Reynolds were enough for the Dons to defeat Sutton United 4-2 and lift the Amateur Cup. The most coveted prize in amateur football was heading to Plough Lane at last. We love a little bit of success at the same old Wombles. It's who we are. We're back.
Time to believe.
Might not be life or death, my friend, but to me, it's more important than that.
Hello, hello, dear listener. And can I just say, for the first time in a while, there'll be no voice notes, which we've realised is just a bad thing.
It actually proved to be true as well.
That, we could have had some great voice notes live from Groomsby.
Yeah, I know. But then who knows what would have happened? Anyhow, hello, dear listener. My name is Matt Cooper, and today I'm joined, as ever, by mon frère, Niall Cooper. Hello, Niall.
Hello, Matthew.
You awake, mate?
I'm here.
And I'm joined by our wonderful producer in his long sleeve, Avison wooden top. Hello, Mr. Adam Proctor.
Yes, good evening, right, everyone. Yeah, I'm great.
Fantastic stuff. And we're joined by our football guru, not an air football guru, but I'm sorry to say this, the only member of the Seymour Wombles team that managed to get up to Grimsby. Hello, Mr. Mark Lewis.
£132 train fare well spent, my friend.
Fantastic. £132.
Well, that's what happens if you decide on Thursday to go rather than like a month before.
But hold on a minute. Weren't you driving up there?
Oh, it was a whole shenanigans, but I was considering driving, but then I worked out I'd have to hire a car and rent it for a longer period. And basically, in the end, because I went on my own and my kids didn't get out of bed and my wife couldn't come because she was working, it was cheaper for me to just go by train, which is great because met a load of other fans on the train, bit of a good chit-chat with a bunch of different people. Chris Thorpe, bless him, from the club media team, was on the same train as us, but he disappeared at one point. Just because we were all talking about him, basically. And it was fascinating listening to the level of optimism of everybody, which, needless to say, on the way up was really quite low.
It's fascinating. Do you know what was quite interesting? And I can imagine that our wonderful colleagues at the 9 Years podcast must be feeling very smug, because I think they were kind of like being a bit more positive about the situation. I know that last Monday we were still like, oh my God, we're going to throw this away. But in actual fact, all the results kind of worked for us. Not only the fact that Notts lost, we won. So we've now got the home leg on the second tie rather than the first. But also, in a horribly weird way, it was quite nice that Salford missed out.
Oh, what a tragedy. I think you'll find, actually, that I was, in fact, interviewed by BBC Radio Humberside because I wanted to do it.
No.
On a train on Wednesday night on my way home. And they put me on the spot completely and asked me whether we'd be in the playoffs. And I said yes. So there.
Ah, you see.
If Adam wants to find that and he can add it to, you know, this week's episode, just to prove that I wasn't talking out of my hat, why not?
Hey, though, Mark. Come on, mate. Let's remember that we are the It's Time to Believe club.
This is where we are now.
70 points. Second highest points tally since we got back into the league in 2011.
We've worked so hard to get a team, get a league pace and get a stadium.
Our stadium.
This season, we are so close.
Beaten Ipswich.
We've taken Newcastle virtually all the way.
And smashed the franchise.
We have done all of this as a fans-owned club.
To the team.
You know how hard we've fought.
On the pitch, you are our representatives.
You embody us as a club.
Now is not the time to be downhearted. It's the time to believe.
It's time to believe.
It's time to believe.
It's time to believe.
It is time to believe.
Time to believe!
It is time to believe.
It is time to believe.
It's time to believe.
It's time to believe.
It's time to believe.
It's time to believe.
True on you, Dons.
It's the little bit that we did earlier on, and I've got to be so thankful for everyone that contributed to our little video that we pulled together, that it's time to believe video that we put up. It was amazing, and especially big thanks to Trisha from the States, who woke up, knew that it was important, and did her little bit, which was brilliant. And I'm really grateful to everyone that's put in there. And personally, I'm loving Bob Walshy Walsh's bit. He was fantastic. So if you haven't seen our little video, we'll put a link to it in our description here. And we might even have the words at the beginning of this podcast. You might have heard them already. But that was a lot of fun. So, you know, people were believing.
I've got to say, Matt, big shout also to Tom Northwood.
Time to believe.
Which I thought was awesome. So, Tom,
one of the other guys on there, people might not know, the guy that was wearing the yellow pinstripe women's home shirt, it's Peter Leng, who's been involved in some dance rock stuff before as well. He ended up sitting about three seats away from me in the stand with a random guy I'd never met before. I had to introduce myself to this guy because when we scored, I just grabbed this guy and I wouldn't let him go for about 2 minutes while we were just jumping up and down. It was really quite inappropriate. He said, "Oh, well, my name's Tom or Tim, I think. So hello, Tom or Tim, whichever one it is. And apologies for just like randomly grabbing onto you because you were the nearest thing that I could celebrate with."
And Mark, so what was the experience like? Because obviously, I'm just going to give you, first of all, this was my Anals experience. We didn't, we couldn't find it on a video anywhere. I didn't know if it was on Sky or anything, or Now. So we didn't.
At Plough Lane with hundreds of people there in the Phoenix.
Oh, we didn't get to Plough Lane. So Niall and I were at my house, and what we had on was BBC Final Score. Obviously the Twitter and the WhatsApp and, you know, everything else that we could get on. And we were just sitting there and it was horribly nervous. It was awful. I kept having to find little jobs around the house to do, so I couldn't do it. And
I on the other hand, Matt, while you were doing that, we were doing all right. So I had to not move for superstitious reasons at all. So I was stationary.
Niall couldn't move from where he was because of superstition. So if he just moved anything, it could go all against us. It's a ridiculous, this being a football fan thing and superstition, we've talked about it before. We should go into it more in depth when we've got more time, but it was absolutely ridiculous. But Adam, I'm just going to say, you were the first person that alerted us to the fact that we'd gone 1-0 up. Because I know that you were watching it on TV. You got it through VPN. Is that right?
Yeah. I had to watch it. So yeah, I connected to VPN, which is a perfectly legitimate, legal way of connecting to the internet, which put me in Germany so I could watch the stream. And I still have to pay for it, so the club get my money. It wasn't that bad watching it, actually. I mean, I was kind of kept looking out for Mark to see if I could see him in the background of the pictures and whatever.
And behind the goal to the left, the opposite side for where Hutchinson celebrated.
So how close? The question is, how close were you to Hayden the Womble being surfed?
That was in the middle. No, so there was like, you know. To be fair to Grimsby, it's. I would like to say it's a tight little ground. What it is a ground where four stands were built completely independently of each other, and there are massive gaps in the corners of each stand. We were behind one goal. They were all. If anyone's been to Leighton Orient, they're a bit like the stands there in that they all had decent, relatively low sloping roofs, which means the acoustics were great. And to be fair again to the fans, I've been to four or five away games now this season. I can't really remember too many of them. I've tried to obliterate Gillingham from my memory. Did do Port Vale as well.
Gilly who?
Exactly. As well as Cheltenham. But each of those grounds, to be fair, the away fans have been absolutely amazing. Even Gillingham, when there's no opportunity for acoustics. And after about half an hour, I was getting relatively nervous, and we were attacking our end. The fans decided they were going to liven things up. So Hayden de Womble had been on the train with us in his alter ego of Dean Parsons and chatting and everything else. And I was
Mark, down into wine. Mark, there's Hayden de Womble. He's just Hayden de Womble. There is no alter ego.
Sorry, Hayden.
You might have to wipe that, Adam, because we all know that there's only, Hayden de Womble. Yeah. And there's no person
anyway, and then all of a sudden this chant goes up that they were gonna crowd surf a Womble, and it's like, well, hang on, he's quite anyone in that suit is quite heavy, right? But next thing you know is that literally he is in the middle of the crowd, and he's being moved around, like, you know, Bruce Springsteen at a gig or something. Then they crowd surf the Pope, not the Pope, but someone dressed as the Pope, obviously, which is all very amusing. And actually, that totally lightened the mood of everybody in the way end. Obviously it meant that we were watching that rather than watching the game for a minute or two, which is probably quite good, because at that point Grimsby were resorting to plan A and plan B and plan C. In other words, they only had one plan, which was lump the ball in from a centre back, which was a long throw, and see whether we could deal with it. And fortunately we could.
Which was fine. Do you know what though? Sunday, I was talking to someone about the game, who had watched it on Sky, so I could have got it on Sky anyhow, and it was saying that you know, obviously was really pleased for us, but he felt that Grimsby had a nailed on penalty. And I just wondered what you thought about that.
It wasn't nailed on. It was down our end. It was first half.
Yeah,
I mean, the formation itself was interesting in that they chose. We know that Omar's been knackered for ages, but they chose to start with Marcus Brown playing as an out-and-out striker.
Yeah.
And with the greatest will in the world, he doesn't hold the ball up, and he wasn't actually creating very much at all, or even getting on the ball much. So then he tried to be some kind of defensive stalwart in the way that Omar can be, but all he succeeded in doing was kind of getting into a wrestling match with the guy that he tracked back. And to be honest, if it had been given, I wouldn't have been surprised. If I'd been a Grimsby fan and seen that quite close up, fortunately it was down our end, not down their end, I would have been screaming blue murder. So I think we might have got away with one there. But to be honest, they were pretty average. We played into the wind, so much so we chose to play into the wind, which was quite astute from the start. You could see Goodman in the warm-up wasn't even getting over the halfway line with his goal kicks. And with the wind, they were quite... I was going to say quite threatening. They weren't quite threatening, but they had obviously the benefit of that, whereas we were not able to make any headway whatsoever, mainly because we're playing the ball in the air without a figurehead up front.
And then obviously the goal happens, which is brilliant. I mean, I'm sure I saw something on socials which was hilarious, that Harbottle was 150-1 to score with a header. I don't know whether that was made up or if that was true, but he almost did it, didn't he? I mean, you know, he rose brilliantly, headed it down off the bar, comes back out. Sam Hutchinson was in the right place at the right time, poked it in. You must have been going crazy, Mark.
Utterly bananas, because it came in the corner of the other side. So the corner was coming from the right-hand side and I was sitting on the left about 10 rows back. Saw the header, thought the header was by Lewis, actually. And then before you even had a chance to get frustrated because the header had hit the bar, it had been bundled in. And then it was like, you know, hats flying everywhere. And what was even madder, and I didn't realise this until at the end of the game when we were all cheering Harbottle, because Harbottle came to do the whole fist bump thing.
Yeah.
Was that in front of us was a sort of mid-20s lady and another lady who's probably kind of a parent's age, so mid-50s or even slightly older. And as everyone was cheering Harbottle, this woman just turned around to us and said, "That's my man, that's my man." So we worked it out that basically that was Harbottle's girlfriend, who'd been standing in front of us with, I think, either her mum or Harbottle's mum the whole game.
Oh, brilliant. That is so cool. I mean, it was brilliant. And listen to the comments afterwards. It would be interesting to know what you thought about a player of the match, but the ones that kept coming up to me were Lewis, Reeves and Smith. And it felt like Reeves benefited from having a break. But what was your thoughts on who was the player of the match, Mark?
I think the fascinating thing is we've justifiably had to go at Jackson and his coaching team because they seem tactically inflexible and don't make subs early enough and so on. For this game, two distinctly different things happened. They switched Tilly and Nerfil, and we thought this was just a temporary thing, but they played the whole game like that. So Nerfil played a left wing back and Tilly played right wing back the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
And it nullified everything that they had, and Nerfil actually seemed to get a bit of zest back, and he was burning the equivalent wing back. So that was obviously something tactically they'd thought about. And then from about the 50th minute or so onwards, they just left Hutchinson sitting, even though he'd been already booked for a really needless delaying a free kick. They left Hutchinson sitting, and they let Reeves and Ali Smith, Smudge, push on. So all of a sudden, we were properly closing down and pressing in a way that I don't remember us doing since the days of Ali, frankly, doing it. Like middle of last season, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And as a result of that, it was like, who's this player? Oh my God, it's Reeves. You know, this is like vintage Reeves and almost like going back to the playoff final against Plymouth those however many years ago. And the two of them were just absolutely pests on top of their goalkeeper, on top of their defenders. And of course, their defenders were then forced to hoof it long and couldn't hoof it long very much because they were still playing into the wind. So yeah, tactical masterclass, really.
And so who was your player of the match?
I would say probably, even so, probably still Harbottle.
Yeah.
Because they again, just like putting it long. The only real effort they had and real outlet they had was the big centre forward who got in one effort on the Goodman push around the post second half. But other than that, he was really quite...
that's great to hear. It's great to hear because, you know, like obviously Harbottle's taken over Ogg's position, but I think he's growing into it more and more. Adam, you were obviously watching it online, so you had a different perspective of the game. Mark, you were just like in it. What was your thoughts? What was your perception of the game?
I thought this first half, you couldn't tell about the wind on TV, obviously. That was difficult to see, and Mark had sort of said about that, so I was trying to see. So first half was obviously disappointing, no shots on target again. So I remember sort of going in the garden and being quite stressed about the fact that we could we hold it for another 45 minutes. But the second half I thought was fantastic. I thought Goodman, you know, did pull off some amazing saves at various points, which actually I thought was, yeah, the one right towards the end.
One, literally one. In the whole game, Adam. Nothing else.
Yeah, yeah, sorry.
That's why it wasn't one case of holding on, because they were so impotent, sorry.
Yeah, yeah, rather than omnipotent. I think Grimsby being omnipotent would be a weird thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think Goodman's save the one save whenever it was in the second half after we'd scored was crucial. I think we did some good things, you know, like we did hold it in the corner. We played tactically overall really well. So I don't think I can pick out anyone I particularly thought was amazing in the whole game. I thought tactically we went into it really well. Turns out Skiverton got a yellow card as well. Hayden got sent off or something apparently as well. It's ridiculous, you know. How many?
Why Hayden got sent off? I talked to someone close to Hayden on the way home and asked him, did he know why Hayden was sent off? And it turns out the referee had decided, because Hayden the Womble and Harry the Haddock, their mascot, were both behind a fence about 10 feet away from the ground, from the pitch, in one of these neutral zones between the stands. They were just standing there watching the game, minding their own business. And the referee decided that apparently, because one was in yellow and blue and one was in black and white, that was confusing him and the match officials. The fact they're 7 feet tall and dressed in a furry mascot suit seems to be completely irrelevant.
I love the fact that they got confused because one of them is a giant Womble.
They got sent to the bar, which he was quite happy about. So
that is hilarious.
I mean, I thought I thought the ref had a pretty rubbish game again. We got some needless yellows, which is really, really frustrating. Brown booting the ball away was silly. I don't know when those cards get cancelled or not for playoffs. So that was a bit frustrating. So again, rubbish refs. So I think one of my comments on the chat was, do we get upgraded refs for the playoffs? Probably not.
Well, I'd have thought we're going to get, they're going to be decent. They're going to be decent refs. It's going to be interesting. But what I think is quite interesting is because we're fickle football fans. So, you know, like last week we're all like doom and gloom, and this week we're all feeling kind of like more excited. And so now, and also there was amazing confusion after the game about when the matches were going to be happening, because the first official thing, which I think came out on the Notts County site, was the matches were going to be at 8 o'clock next.
The first thing to say is they had other dates.
There were other dates already all over the place.
In the EFL calendar before the game kicked off. So we had some rough ideas, which we've already talked about on the podcast. And then, at the end of the game, the EFL website changed to say that both of our games were on a Friday at 8 p.m.
Yep.
And then it changed again.
Yeah, it did. So we got the... so then it finally came through, this was all happening within half an hour to an hour. Everyone was very confused about where
we were
everything
on the train
was going to
be. Home, and there were all these messages going up and down the carriage because no one had a clue what was going on.
Yeah, and so finally we can finally say that next Saturday, the coming Saturday, it will be 8 o'clock at Notts County, because 8 o'clock is a familiar time for football matches to start. I think we've throughout the season, we've all seen 8 o'clock matches. And then, as usual, thanks to our friends at Sky, the following Saturday, it's going to be on the night, on the 17th, Saturday the 17th, it's going to be at 12:30, again, a regular football kickoff time. So it's, you know, it is what it is. It's going to be interesting to see how many people we're going to take up there. I mean, I know that we've got 1,850, I think, tickets allocated to us. Whether they'll give us any more, I don't know. I'm pretty sure those will go very quickly. Although, yet again, I have to confess, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it. And Mark, I think you're away somewhere.
So months and months ago, before I even looked at anything to do with the playoffs, when I arranged a work trip to Germany, which I'm going tomorrow afternoon, I then realised that I could stay out for the weekend and see some family relatives who I haven't seen for many, many years, because they live in the same town in Munich, in south Germany. So I'm staying for the weekend, and I'm flying back on Sunday evening at 7:45.
Oh, my God. And then, Adam, obviously, it's a very long way for you to go.
Actually, no, I'm flying Sunday, sorry. I'll be able to watch it, because I'll be in Germany on Saturday.
So, Adam, it's a long way for you to go. Niall, you've got an operation.
Yeah, I can't do Saturday, but I'm going to risk the week after, which I've been reading all the stats. Most of you don't know, I'm having a hernia operation, and it varies on which website you read about how much you're supposed to rest it. And apparently, you know, according to one website, it's okay. There might be many others that I looked at.
Speak to somebody who's had four hernia operations, and he can give you proper in-depth personal experience to say that actually for about 36 hours you ain't going to be wanting to move physically at all anywhere.
There you are.
But I'm just thinking this is 10 days later.
10 days later, you should be fine, genuinely.
I seem to remember one game after Niall had a double heart bypass, Alex squeezed him inappropriately. So I'm just, you know, you might need to wear a womble suit to not be grabbed by anyone near us.
I mean, it is fantastic. Listen, we're gonna have a little bit of a break now. When we come back, we're gonna come with a special guest. So. I don't know. Do we? There's no adverts or whatever it is, but it will seamlessly move into the next section. And ladies, dear listener, welcome back to the Same Old Wombles podcast. We're so excited because, you know, we like to throw in special guests every now and again. Well, we are throwing in what I can describe as a legend at AFC Wimbledon. Former captain, wonderful, Will Nightingale. Hello, Will. How are you doing?
Hiya, Matt. It's not a bad introduction, that. I'll take that introduction. No, it's as I was just saying, it's really good to jump on and see you all again. Obviously, like familiar faces at the club over the years. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what questions you have for me and just opening up from the heart and obviously a club that I love.
We are so pleased for you to be here. Thank you so much. And can I ask this question? Where are you now? Where are you talking from? Where are you?
I'm in Inverness. I'm in Scotland, which is, it's actually a very nice sunny day at the minute. So it's, it's beautiful. Honestly, it's stunning up here.
Yeah, it's got, I mean, I was up around that neck of the woods recently, up near Aberdeenshire. But yeah.
We're near Inverness.
I'm
in London. I mean, it's like saying I'm in like Plymouth. That's quite near London, isn't it? That's the same sort of deal, man. That's just ridiculous.
You don't know where I was in Aberdeenshire. I was very close. Will, I'm very sorry. I apologise for the lack of geography from my fellow podcasters.
To be fair, it's a funny one, really, because Aberdeen, obviously, it is, as the others say, it is a couple of hours away. But at the same time, it is our local rivalry in the league. It's the closest one to us. So it's, just along the East Coast. Honestly, it's stunning. Like, I've never actually been to Scotland before, but it's beautiful, so many parts of it.
And how are you finding it at the moment? I mean, because I know you've had a crappy season. We know this. Yeah, it's been tough.
Matt, I think Matt, right, isn't it like you take the M1, right, go up there for a long time, get the A1, and then you go up through Edinburgh, and that's how you find it eventually, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah, it's north.
That's our blame talk.
Anyhow, Will, so how's it been, mate? Because I know this would be a tough season.
Yeah, it's been frustrating. But like, obviously, to be honest with you, there's been like a lot of like combining factors that have like added to the situation that I've like found myself in. Obviously, I know, obviously, I've had a certain history of having injuries in the past. And it's kind of always been like a reputation I've battled with. But yeah, there's quite a lot of context to it that obviously only players behind the scenes always only get to see it. And, you know, it's not always as black and white as it would appear. But it's obviously, yeah, it's been a frustrating season because I would have liked to have got more games.
Mate, you Will, you can't leave us like that. There's been lots of different situations going on. What's going on? Right. Honestly, listen, there's five people who listen and four of them are on the podcast.
I'll do my best to obviously like say it from my perspective, and I get it. Yeah. There's always, you know, there's always two sides to the story, and there's always there's never. But from my perspective, how it played out was obviously I come up here last year. I had in my eyes what was a fairly successful season in terms of the fact that I got 28 games in. Obviously, they have less games up here. They only play 38 in the league, and obviously we're one of the smallest clubs in the league, so we are punching above our weight, you know, kind of similar to probably...
It sounds familiar.
Yeah, probably what I went through a little bit at a time going through League One at times. And, you know, obviously the staying up was a success, as what a lot of fans would have seen. You know, it's kind of what they were striving for at the time. And, you know, it's something that they're working on to change the mindset of it. So obviously I was unfortunate to have a hamstring injury last season, which was my only injury last season. But it was I've never had a muscle injury in my whole career. So it was something that was new to me, something that I was dealing with. And I kind of flagged up my hamstring was a bit sore in the January. And I had that Derek Adams as manager at the time, who was obviously in charge of Plymouth. And I basically kept flagging it up. Something doesn't feel right. Something doesn't feel right. And then he said, get yourself through to the January break, and then you can have a proper rest then. Obviously, they have a winter break. So
yeah.
He gave us 2 days off, which I was obviously under the impression I was going to get a lot more the way he was speaking. So I got myself through to then. And then our first game back was Celtic away. Played Celtic away. It was unfortunate, lost 1-0. But I said, nah, something doesn't feel right. I just feel like I can't sprint something. And again, never had a muscle injury, so it was new to me. In the end, 5 games later, my hamstring went. So I come back to Wimbledon, did my rehab. And at the time, they said you'll be out for the season, but I was desperate to try and finish the season on a high. So did my rehab. And when I got back fit at the time, the EFL season was finishing. And a lot of the, you know, Wimbledon boys are saying, oh, just, you know, get yourself on the holidays and that. But it didn't feel right. So I came back up, finished the last six games, because we had the two playoff games. So played them games and I felt good. I felt great. Finished the season on a high. We stayed up. I then had 4 weeks off in the summer where I completely rested. So I thought, right, rest the hamstring, completely rested. Obviously re-signed back up here. And I had an unfortunate incident, literally second day of pre-season, my foot got stuck in the ground. And I just had a little tear in my cartilage in my knee. I saw a specialist and he said, it's nothing serious, but it's important that you rest it for 8 weeks. He said, nothing, like, you'll be fine. You don't need any work done to it. It'll just heal up naturally. So I rested 4 weeks. I then wanted to get, I started to feel okay. So I wanted to get myself back training. I went back out to training thinking, oh, let's ease myself back into this. Trained on the Friday, which coincidentally was the day before the start of the season up here. And I wasn't training thinking, I'm going to play. I was just wanting to get myself back in. Ended up having a really good training session. And the manager pulled me and said, I want you to start tomorrow. So I'd had 4 weeks off in the summer, 2 days training, then another 4 weeks off when I should have had 8 weeks off. And then literally pretty much play. Obviously, I wanted to play. I was desperate to play. Played the 90 minutes. It did, like, I could still feel the knee a bit, which I made that aware to them. But then he said, oh, can you just get through one more game? Because at the time he said, just get through tomorrow, then I'll rest you. But then 0-0 away to Motherwell, he said, oh, just one more game and then I'll rest you for the cup game. So I got through the next game, Dundee at home, 1-1. And then I thought I was going to get a rest. He said, I'll completely rest you. You can fly home, see your family. So I booked flights to see the family. And then halfway through the training session on the Thursday, the other centre-half was feeling his hamstring. And pulled me aside and said, I need you to play in the cup game. So I played again. And it was almost as though, right, that's it, Will's back. And then literally a few weeks later, then just the same tear was just made bigger. And the specialist said it obviously hadn't healed. And, you know, now you just need, he said, it's still nothing serious, but now I'd recommend tidying it up. He said, otherwise you could do even more damage. So I had that tidied up. And then it's just been one of them where he's brought in players and he's kind of just stuck with his players. I've been back training for a few months now. But the players he brought in are like good players, like one on loan from Barnsley, who was playing in Barnsley for League One last year, one on loan from Everton, who I think will be a very good player, and one on loan from Norwich. And they've kind of all done really well. And the one he's got on the bench is a young centre-half that plays for Scotland under-21s, and he wants to try and bring through the youth because he come through the club himself. And it's obviously I would have wanted to get more games, but in hindsight, I would have played the situation out a bit differently. That's a bit of a long-winded story, but I've tried to shorten it as best as I can.
No, Will, that's great. Thank you very much for that, you know.
It does
very honest
to,
of you.
Explain why, when I keep looking at Ross County's results and fixtures and lineups and whatever else, then I unfortunately haven't seen you in the picture recently.
Yeah, just and then just my luck again. Like, obviously, eventually got back in the squad maybe a few weeks ago, and then literally thought that was it. I was back, and I ended up getting tonsillitis and was on antibiotics, and like I wanted to come in, and they kind of said no, stay away because it can be contagious, and one of them, and just when your luck's down kind of thing. But it's, you know, it's one of them, things happen, you get on with it, you deal with the hand you're dealt, and like it's not like a, you know, woe me, like it's still been a brilliant experience up here that I wouldn't have changed.
So how many games are left of the season?
So 3 games left of the split, and it is crunch time at the minute, to be fair. So 3 games left. We've got on Saturday the team that's below us, and then the following game is the team that's above us. So it's a crucial 2 games to try and stay in the division, really.
What's the relegation playoff like? Because that seems like quite hardcore.
Yeah, it is quite intense, but at the same time, I feel like when you're like involved in it and wrapped up in it, like last year, I was just so excited to play, and I feel like I was in a good position myself to play, that I don't remember looking back with nerves. And I don't know if that's because of obviously the experiences I've had with Wimbledon at times and whatnot, but I think they had it even nervier the season before. I think there was 3-0 down with 20 minutes to play in the second leg, so yeah, and they managed to pull off an escape there, So whereas this year, like, we kind of won 6-1 on aggregate, and it was kind of maybe because we've comfortably felt better on the 2 days that why nerves wasn't as much of a thing.
Wow. I mean, it's the whole thing has been, what an experience though, going from Wimbledon to going up to Inverness where you are now. I mean, that is some journey, my friend.
I know. Yeah, I've not done it half-hearted moving.
Ross
County, that's I mean, like, you know, surely, I mean, like, you know, I'm married to a Scot, but my memory seems to serve that it's actually quite cold. So, like, wasn't there not any thought, like, why am I going to Marbella FC?
Marbella FC
never came knocking. So, what were the other options
at that time when you were looking at when the loans were coming about?
Yeah, so the thing is, I had, so before I signed my last deal with Wimbledon, I had quite a few League One options. And obviously, I was fortunate enough to have 6 or 7 years in League One with Wimbledon as it was. And obviously, yeah, so I had a couple of options in League One before I signed my last deal. But obviously, I wanted to stay at Wimbledon at the time. And then when it came around that you know, the club kind of needed a change and it was right for, you know, for the club to move on, you know, not just myself, but like quite a few people, it needed that fresh start. I was kind of hopeful that I was going to get more League One options, but I didn't. And obviously probably because of how the club had done in the previous years. And so I had quite a few League Two options. And then it was just a case of then my agent contacted me and said Ross County popped up. And it was, you know, I thought, you know what, something completely different, get the opportunity to play against Celtic and Rangers. And so I kind of just like, I came up, I spoke to Simon Bassey. I gave him a call because I kind of trust his footballing knowledge. And he basically advised me to come up and see it. And so I came up and saw it. And I loved it. The boys were welcoming the whole place and it just felt right. So I'd kind of just like, didn't think too much into it, but kind of just jumped into the opportunity really.
Wow.
See, because Bassey often comes up when I've talked to ex-players about being that kind of little trusted ex-Wimbledon person and, you know, always keeps in contact with all that sort of stuff. Is Bassey that kind of like father figure in a way to a lot of the players about somebody they would turn to and they would trust on that sort of stuff from the generation, particularly considering the fact you've come through the club with?
Yeah, I think a little bit. Yeah, I think Bass kind of, you know, everyone kind of knows that Bass loves football. He breathes it. He's always doing something, whether it's going to a game or like he breathes, lives the sport. And it was one of them as well, where I feel like Bass has earned like quite a lot of respect from players over the years because he was always just like upfront and honest. He never really beat it around the bush. He didn't tell you what you wanted to hear. He was kind of always like gave you an honest perspective. And I feel like that's probably one of the characteristics that has earned him trust from a lot of players over the years. Obviously, you know, I can only judge him how he is with me. There's probably players out there that were, you know, not his biggest fan. But then in my eyes, there's probably more. There's a vast majority more that are than not. But from my experience, he's brilliant with me.
So you've done another classic. You've done another classic. Hang that little carrot. And I'm going to grasp this one, right? So Bass was basically blunt, right? So yeah. I'm interested in an example of Bass's bluntness. Not necessarily just to you, Will. If there's any other moment you kind of recall of Bass going, saying something like, you know, the way I look at it, is that I'm going to go back to Jen, my wife again, classic example, right? She's great at being really blatantly honest. So if we go to a restaurant and you might be going like, yeah, this is a nice pretty meal, whatever. She'll just go, shit, right? Is that like that?
He is. I remember the main example that probably springs to mind is, I remember we had a game once in, we had Aki away. I think I was quite young still because I think I was on the bench. I think I was still like trying to break through at the time. And obviously like first team experience was still like new to me. Like I was still learning at the time a lot of like what the culture's like. And I think we, I can't remember if it was at half time or full time. I think it was at full time. I think we was 2-0 down at half time. And I think they were away at Aki, and I don't know if you've heard it before, but at the old changing rooms, because I think they've changed it since, was the tightest, smallest changing rooms ever. Like, it was, you know, you pretty much sat on top of each other, shower, the physio bed was at to go in the showers, like, all just different things. It was just so tight. But I remember, like, the subs were obviously, like, sat in one corner and the team was ran the other side. And I remember Ards, I think, was so fuming that he didn't want to come in and speak to us, because he would have, like, there's times where he, you know, lost his lid at us and let us know. But I think this was so particularly bad. I think the second half we got a goal back, so we lost 2-1 overall. But I think the game was so particularly bad that then, yeah, he couldn't come in. So Bass has come in, and I remember Bass, you know, laying into everyone to the point where he's, like, shaking. Like, I've never seen anything, you know, screaming, like, yeah, screaming top of his lungs, F in this, F in that, and, you know, shaking. And, like, that side of him came out because he did care about the club so much. And he had no problems letting people know if they weren't up to standard or up to the expectations that, you know, that he that the club kind of set at the time.
Wow. So at that point, you were on the bench. Do you remember your first start for Wimbledon? When was that? And what was that like?
2015 was it? It was Accrington Stanley at home.
Oh, right. This is a better story, is it?
Well, yeah, mate. Yeah, you was probably waiting for more there with that. But it's, you know, funny story in the build-up to my debut. We had do you remember the centre-half, Jake Goodman?
Yeah.
We had him on loan from Millwall. I broke his foot in the week. He would have been playing. So I wouldn't have got my debut unless I broke his foot in the week in training.
Clever move, Will. Clever move.
I know. It was, I know, let him have it kind of thing. But it was, yeah, he broke his foot. And then Ards obviously trusted me at the time to, you know, have my debut.
And what was that?
It was, on the Tuesday night, we had Carlisle at home and I came on for a few minutes and I came on in the number 10 position. And then it was the Saturday game. I was starting centre half. So it was a bit of a strange one at the time.
Well, what was your experience of playing a number 10, Will? So sorry, like, I mean, like, I obviously wasn't at the Carlisle, I don't remember you suddenly coming on as a number 10.
Yeah.
Is that like, is that your kind of, you know, you look back, go, oh man, club missed out. I could have played number 10 and like, it would have been, you know, totally different.
Well, I came through the youth academy as a centre mid, and I got my first professional contract as a centre mid. And like all the Surrey Youth Cup games, used to play centre mid. I captained the county centre mid, and Neil Cox at the time was the one who said to me, pulled me aside, and he said, "You're a centre half." And I was pretty like headstrong, adamant at the time. I was like, "Nope, centre mid." Played my whole career there, like obviously of youth days. I said, like, captain account, and I said, got my first pro contract, I'm a centre. And it kept going back and forth over a couple of weeks to the point where he turned around to me and he said, well, we can either offer you another professional contract as a centre-half or we'll release you as a centre-mid, so it's up to you. And then I kind of, you know, said, well, that's that then. And then I was very grateful, to be fair, because I realised it was a lot more suited to me. But yeah, at the time, the Carlisle game, we was losing, and I think he looked round to the bench and obviously just wanted to chuck somebody on and try and make a bit of an impact. It was only a couple of minutes, but yeah.
Well, I just looked up that team that you came into against Carlisle and then the first start, and you had, you know, your Akin Fenwers and your Frankhams and your Barry Fullers. There's some pretty, and some young lad called Jake Reeves, whatever happened to him.
Yeah.
some pretty strong personalities in that dressing room, I'm guessing, to come into as a young lad yourself.
Oh, big characters. It was brilliant. Like, I look back and, you know, I wouldn't say I took it for granted because I definitely didn't. I tried to grab as much as I could off of who I could at the time, but I definitely, you know, definitely wouldn't have seen it for what it was as now when I look back. And I think how lucky was I to have those sort of characters and big names. You know, even at the time, the four strikers we had, Joachim Fenwer, Tom Elliott, Lyle Taylor, and Adi Aziz, as a young centre half, to come up against them in training, I was getting a bit of everything. I was almost like, it was brilliant every day training against the likes of them, you know, EFL veterans, some of them. And yeah, it was brilliant, really.
How do you get the ball off him, off Beast? Because he's like that wide. How do you get the ball off him in training?
Yeah, it's a bit of a problem because he's one of them. The way he played, he, when he gets his body in, like, in line with the flight of the ball, you're not moving him. So I remember we had Wickham at home, and obviously, I can't remember what year it would have been, but obviously he was playing for Wickham. And I was, because I'd like come up against him so much in training, I was kind of aware of the fact that, you know, I know a lot of players know that you can't go fighting or nudging him, but you still get that bit of ego as a centre-half where you want to. But I remember at the time, just to win the ball in the head, I had to like jump over him. That was the only way, like at the time, because you're not moving him. You just need to judge the flight of the ball. But yeah, he is a special talent with what he maximised what he had, and he was what he had. You know, there's not many better at, in my opinion.
I love watching that games because that was a period when my daughter used to go all the time, and she used to like watching Akinfenwa and Aziz, and it'd be like, how different a pace could you possibly get? I mean, Akinfenwa would be like, you know, right, he could be 30 meters ahead of Aziz and he would still lose, right? Because it was just like the slowest lump that we ever had, right? But amazing effective. So when you look at those four, and it was like a really talented four, and we'll come back to this a bit later on, but like, which of those forwards do you think were like one, like, really you thought was the best? And then also character wise, because they were strong characters, which one out of that? And you could add in, you know, characters from the whole team as well.
Yeah, very difficult to say because obviously I feel like they also complemented each other and brought the best out of each other at the time when they played with each other. Obviously, Lyle was a natural finisher and a goal scorer. And that's probably like, you know, the most important thing in football. You get a goal scorer and, you know, the amount of goals he got that season to help us up. But then a lot of people obviously say we wouldn't have gone up in them playoffs if it wasn't for Bayo, the impact he had when he came on at Aki and whatnot. Tom Elliott, he was one that I thought got better and better with his career at Wimbledon, to the point where in the end, his last season in League One with us, I thought he was a little bit unplayable, to be honest. Again, like obviously I was either playing or on the bench, I'm just watching, you know, there weren't many defenders that were coming out on top of him. And I feel like that was obviously our most comfortable season in League One that first year. And I think he was a bit of a like a big miss that people don't realise at the time. It probably is a toss-up between them three. Probably, I'm going to go with Akinfenwa just because of the influence and the culture that he drove around the place. I just think his big personality was like just infectious, and just he was just a winner. And like little things, like it used to just be towards the start of the season, just Bayo in the gym just all the time. But then like, because somebody saw Bayo was in the gym, another lad went, and then before you knew it, it was like the whole squad towards the end of the season was in the gym doing like sessions. And he used to bring a lot of the boys together just his character, like very funny. He used to start debates in training every day, and I think he just used to bring that togetherness, which is probably what Wimbledon's renowned on back in the day.
And it was interesting, obviously after the playoff final, he was like putting on WhatsApp that he was at. Was that a surprise that he didn't stay on? Because I think for a few of us, it was a surprise. And we always thought Tom Elliott was a great find, and we were upset that he left eventually as well.
Yeah, I think with Bayo, I think obviously, you know, I don't know when he last would have played League One at the time. And obviously Ards was in a position where he wanted to strengthen where he thought was going to strengthen the club, you know. But, you know, people aren't always going to make the right decisions. And, you know, you never know what the what if would have been if he stayed on.
Yeah.
Obviously, Ards looked at his age at the time and his mobility, thought maybe League One was a step too far. But then, obviously, Bayo being...
Hold on, Will. Will, you just said mobility and Akinfenwa in the same sentence. I think that made mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if Bayo ever comes on, right, just want to say, right, you are a legend of the club, right? So, like, just put that out there, because you're also much, much bigger than all of us put together. So, just, you know.
Well, that's the thing.
I'd like to say that's Nar's opinion.
That's the thing. He had, like, he was a very honest person himself. He knew what his strengths were. He knew what his weaknesses were. And, you know, he used his strengths very well. And, you know, the club had a lot of success because of his strengths. And Bayo being the character that he is, after being let go, he then went on to go, you know, back-to-back, or not back-to-back, but promoted twice with Wickham from League Two to the Championship. Their record all-time goal scorer. And I reckon a bit of his driving factor would have been, right, I'm going to prove people wrong, because that is who he is. And that's probably why he's been as successful as he is, because he has that ambition to prove people wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. It was an amazing time for us. And obviously, you were part of that moment when we got into League One. And I also want to take you forwards a little bit, because the one thing that I think we're always really excited about is the fact that to have someone who's come through our ranks, you know, you are one of our own. And we've had the COVID thing. We've gone back to Plough Lane. And the first time that we're all allowed back in the stadium, in our new wonderful stadium, we come up against Bolton and you scored our first goal at that. What was that like?
Honestly, like, even you just saying it, like, it does make me a little bit emotional hearing it back. It's there's not really any words that can describe it, because I've basically lived out, you know, the dream, really. You know, like, started at the club when I was 8, fan of the club. Obviously, like, after everything that had happened, it was almost like I was representing every fan that, you know, I've built relationships with over the years. So it was yeah, there's not really any words that can describe it. Just a special moment, and almost like something that was written in the stars, I feel, for me, which I don't really say much, but yeah.
And that moment
you
is
talking, you remember it,
the on the wall of Plough Lane as everybody walks in through the turnstile.
Yeah, it's a big old poster, isn't it? I'm going to have to figure out how I can get that on my small little polo when I eventually leave.
I'll speak to Mark Jones. I'm sure he'll sort something out for you.
So, Will, just do you remember the goal? Could you, you know, talk us through and your kind of reactions, like, and the kind of emotion that would have gone through at that moment?
Yeah, right. Obviously, at the time, we had a set piece coach, that Andy Parslow, and he kind of worked quite closely with me in terms of the fact that he always felt I should have had more goals over the years. And he'd looked back through old footage and had seen that I'd had quite a lot of missed, you know, I was getting myself in good areas, but I wasn't like stacking up the numbers for the amount of goals I should have got. So it was, I felt like at the time I was almost on like a little bit of a run from the back end of the previous season.
Yeah.
And then going into that season, I was almost on a bit of a run, like, in terms of the timing of it. And it was, when you get that, probably the same as a centre forward, probably like similar to Matty Stevens. When he, you know, when you get a couple of goals and you feel like you're on a purple patch, you probably feel like every game, even as a centre half, I felt, you know, corners, free kicks, I almost felt I had that belief I was going to score every game. And it was, yeah, kind of obviously, like, you know, the Ants put in a great ball high up, and I feel like I've just timed it well. And it's just surreal, really. It was obviously just instinct kicks in, you know. You do what you're supposed to do in those moments. And then, you know, I never have a celebration planned, but, you know, I've obviously just run off, and you can see the delight on my face at the time. And you look back, it's, but yeah, at the time you don't know where you're going, what you're doing. It's just obviously just elation, just pure happiness.
And that's incredible, because you've had this dream. You've, like you say, you've lived the dream, which we would all love to have. So did you think, even at that age 8, that this is, you could see a pathway through? Because I know that there must have been loads of people that you played with who you thought had that potential. And yet you've gone through this. I mean, what was that journey like? Were you always like one of the better players in the team, going through captain on things like that, obviously set in the mid to start with? What was that journey like?
So when I joined, back when I was 7 or 8, yeah. You know, I had a couple of friends that was with me at the time, and they were in the second team at the time. We had like a first team and a second team. It was quite popular. Obviously, the academy had been up and running, mm-hmm. but I think it was for 1 year at the time. Wow. 2003, I think it was. And so I actually asked, can I go in the second team with my friends at the time? I wanted to play with them. So I don't know how long that period would have lasted for, but eventually, obviously, they got let go and, you know, progressed to the first team of that underage category. And obviously at the time, you just, as a kid, playing as much football as you can, play for your school. I'm sure the same, yeah. Like with your kids, it was just enjoyment. There was never all like, obviously I always said I wanted to be a professional footballer, but I never pictured that as a kid. I'm just going out playing football. And then as I got older and older, and then at a point I ended up getting scouted by Crystal Palace at like under 15s, under 16s. And I went to the trial, and I was there for 6 weeks, and they invited me to come back for, I think it was another 6 weeks. But at the time, our academy brought out a rule saying if you go on trial anywhere else, you can't come back. So if you go somewhere, I think they was conscious of losing their players at the time. I don't know if it was Nigel Higgs or whoever it was that brought the rule out. And obviously, like, my dad was taking me to training in Palace, like, you know, sometimes 2 hour round trips and stuff and 2 nights a week. And obviously I was a fan of Wimbledon at the time. So I stayed on at Wimbledon and got my scholarship.
Which is the perfect choice because that's our end. And we've got a lot of experience of people in our history who've gone to Palace for a short period of time, realise how rubbish that decision is and have come back to Wimbledon. So you're in a great group, Dave Bassett, Steve Galliers, Will Nightingale.
Yeah. Yeah, and I never have. Obviously, it was only youth age group categories, but I never really like look back and have any regrets with anything in life. Really, there's obviously just learning curves, and obviously, I was lucky enough to progress through the academy, and kind of like my pathway was just mapped out for me, and I just feel so lucky and grateful because, as you say, like I played with some players that, you know, that were brilliant, but it's such a cutthroat industry. And that's why, like, part of the reason I am, like, so proud to have the testimonial is that I do want to be a little bit of an inspiration to academy players, especially, like, our own, that, you know, the opportunity is there if, you know, if A, you have the luck, B, you have the work rate, and obviously, like, because, you know, they've obviously got to a certain level because they've got the talent. It's just all the other stuff that comes into it after that.
And Will, you deserve it more than anything. We're so proud of you and really excited to have that testimonial. So how does it work? Because you've obviously got we're excited to see you. We're excited to see some of the other players that you've played with come along. Are you playing one half for one team and another half for the other team? How's that going to work? Is it called, and what is the team called? Is it the Nightingale All-Stars?
So there's not actually too many. I need to probably get knuckling down with all of those fine details, really. But from my end, I obviously just reached out to as many players as I could over the years, and it was one of them where I just wanted to have, like, obviously people say, oh, you could have had Ross County or you could have done another team, a local team, but to me, it just felt right to just do like a Wimbledon Legends, like through the years, really. And there's quite a few more names that are playing that haven't yet been announced or released yet. So it's
exclusive time. Exclusive. Come on.
Will Nightingale, you've come on. We're looking for just one name. Give us one name. Come on.
One name.
One name who's not been announced that we can announce officially here, because that's the sort of thing that gets us at least another listener.
I'll tell you what, I'll give you one name that has a bit of a story behind it. Not a great story, because you know what some of my stories can be like sometimes. Just
like, your stories are great.
So he's not the most exciting player, but he's definitely, in my eyes, a legend and contributed to the promotion season. Before I say the name, I'll tell you the story. So he, reached out to loads of people and he said to me, oh, my birthday's 31st of May, gutted. Just for context, he plays out in Italy at the minute, but he lives in Holland. These little clues might give it away as I go along. But his birthday's 31st of May. And he said, oh, I gutted, can't make it, really want to come. Like, I'd love to, but yeah, my birthday celebration, I'm back home in Holland. So I was like, no worries, like, thanks for letting me know, I appreciate it. And then literally probably about a month ago, 5-6 weeks ago, he said, oh, I've booked flights for the Sunday morning. I land early in the morning and I've booked flights to go home on the Monday. He was like, I really want to play. I haven't seen you in so long. Can't wait to play. And I just thought, I haven't played with this guy since I was probably 20, probably about 20, I think I was. So 9, 10 years ago. And I was, so it's Keller Roos, the keeper. And I thought,
I knew it.
Oh, excellent.
I thought, how nice is that? Somebody who I've not like played with or seen for, you know, so long, and he's booking flights the morning after his birthday to come over for one day just to play my testimonial. And I thought, little things like that, I just didn't expect, where like so many players that I didn't expect to have wanted to play have shown like a real keenness to be involved. Obviously, you know, like the likes of Ayoub, who's now playing out in, you know,
Qatar,
wherever.
Yeah.
Anybody that knows Ayoub, he's like me personally, I love him, but he's a little like firecracker. He's a little character where he's one of them. You never really know where you stand with him, and he's because he's so like serious and so like when he's playing, he always wants to beat you, and he'd turn up with like little chirpy comments. He used to wind a lot of people up the wrong way, but he's honestly like a brilliant lad, and I always got on well with him. But it just surprised me, the likes of him, and you know, that have shown like a keenness and eagerness to want to play and be involved. It's like, you know, it makes me feel proud.
Will, so you know why this is, don't you? Will, you know why this is, don't you?
How you split them?
Because
you split them, Will. Go on, Matt.
1 second. Will, you know why this is, don't you, mate?
Go on.
Because people have got a load of respect for you. My friend, you've been fantastic. You've been at the club since you were 8. And I know how much time you've given to other projects on the side of things. I know when I was looking to do the artwork inside the stadium, you stepped up and you were there and we were talking about that. You've given so much to the club and so much to other players that you play around. It's not a surprise to me, my friend, because you deserve this. I think people are dropping things because you exemplify what Wimbledon has been about. We're incredibly grateful, mate. And as those other players are.
I'll go back. My daughter is currently travelling around Southeast Asia, right? Oh, and she's like gutted because the timetable means that if we were to get to that game that we're not allowed to talk about, right, she won't be able to make that. But she's back like on the 29th of May.
Oh, yeah.
And there is one game that she can get to. And she's going, and she's like, honestly, if I showed you Snapchat with her, and she's going, you've got Will Nightingale on the pod. And I go, she was like so excited. Because she remembers you. Totally.
Oh,
and you know,
yeah.
So she's well excited about it all.
No, I really appreciate it. Like the kind words, the support, like obviously you guys, like I've spoke to you over the years at the club, and I look forward to just seeing so many people that I've like I said earlier, built those relationships and friendships with over the years. But like the support does mean a lot, because it's it's a club that's like I'm proud of as well. Like you say, like obviously the things I used to do, like obviously, I was lucky enough to win Player of the Year, Young Player of the Year. But I think, like, I'm just equally as proud as, like, winning the Community Player of the Year, like, 3-4 years running. Because, I'm not always going to be in a position where, you know, I get asked to do things. Even this podcast, like, I feel, like, privileged to get asked to do things like this. Because, you know, I'm not always going to get asked. So, I always kind of jump at these opportunities to do things like this.
I think I was going to say the thing for me is that stuff like this shows that, yeah, football obviously for some people is a job, right? And but the people that really connect to the fans, the people that really understand what football is to a community and others, are behind your testimonial. They get that you're part of it. We get you're part of it, and I think that's what makes it so special. That it shows again that football isn't just about kicking a ball around on a Saturday. It's so much more. And I think you exemplify that for the testimonial. And I think that's why all these other players are coming out to do that. So, yeah, Will, thanks again for your time and your commitment to Wimbledon and what I think football is really about.
No,
can I make a quick suggestion about how you pick the team, right?
Yeah,
you've got two teams lined up, right? So I'm imagining before the kickoff, you have them all lined up on the halfway line, right?
Yeah.
And then you've got, Wally and Neil...
Yeah.
Right. Well, nil. And they're just picking it and they go like, right, like old school play.
One by one. Stuff.
Yeah.
I'll have you.
That's a great suggestion.
I love that. That would be awesome before the game starts.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah, that'd be brilliant.
Imagine that. I mean, imagine if Akin Fenwell was last. Oh my God.
Yeah, imagine being the last one picked.
Yeah, hang on. Being the last person picked all the time. Being the last person picked all the time in those kind of situations, I totally do not agree with this situation at all.
Well, like, can you imagine that? Imagine if it wasn't back. I mean, the characters you've got, like, imagine Barry Fuller was towards the end.
I
would not want to be facing Barry Fuller if he was towards the end at all. I'd be like,
Will, can I just ask, because this testimonial is fantastic. We are so pleased that it's happening.
Yeah.
How did it come about?
As I said at the time, like when I signed my last contract, I had like a few other League One teams at the time. And, you know, my loyalties was always to stick with Wimbledon. But I think they kind of got wind of that and knew that. And they kind of said, added into the contract at the time, you know, this takes you through past your 10 years with the club. So like, we'd love to offer you a testimonial with it. And so it was in my contract and, So I was just lucky enough to have it there, kind of thing. And it's Yeah, like, I'm so lucky because obviously it's the first one the club's ever had, and it's like, yeah. I was having a good chat with Akin Fenwood the other week. He's the sort of guy, he has so much time for people. I haven't spoke to him again in quite a few years, but I probably had like an hour long phone conversation with him, and one of the things that stuck out to me when he said it, he was like, Will, like, it's brilliant for you, but he was like, at the same time, he was like, it's brilliant for the club. He was like, the first one the club's done, and it shows loyalty from the club to players. He was like, because he was basically obviously like just giving me bits of advice and helping me out, and like saying, obviously I've never organized one of these before, I'm not an events manager, but he was like saying, they'll be helping you as much as they can, because it's just as big for, just as important for them as it probably is for you, kind of thing. So it's I feel super lucky, and I'm excited to see what it will be like on the day.
So there's a story about testimonials which you're too young to remember, but we're obviously old enough, right? On the basis that we're all in our 50s. So the Saturday after the cup final, so I'm talking May 1988,
long
before you were ever born, but your parents might know the story. Alan Cork, got no hair, we don't care, top goal scorer for the club, before some bloke called Kevin Cooper. He had a testimonial arranged, and obviously we won the cup final, so loads of fans turned up. And who else was there? Have any of you lot were there apart from me? You want to pick up the story now as to why?
I had no money, so I either had to go to the testimonial or the parade.
And that was the parade.
So I was broke. I was 14 at the time. So I went to the parade. So I'm just on the bin.
I wasn't there, my friend. No, but we've all seen the pictures.
So the story basically is that and this is Vinnie Jones, this is John Fashanu, you know some of those characters, you would have heard of them, I'm sure, Will. Basically, somebody decided, and I'm guessing it was probably Jones or Wise, that what they were gonna do was pull a Mooney. So they got every player at the start of the game to pull their shorts down.
I've seen the picture.
There you go. So I'm just wondering what
we're not suggesting
you
that
line
Will.
Up for yours, you know? You don't need to get fined or anything.
But... no, that's back to
Bam from the premises.
On that mark, isn't there
it's
also
not the
a
80s.
Famous calendar? There's a very famous Wimbledon calendar done by Lou Cong Kelly with all the players. That was particularly that also had all the players naked. And there's a particular one of Bassey, I think, with a red card in an appropriate place.
Yeah, I remember that. That was an earlier one, wasn't it? It must have been 2004, 2005.
Oh, brilliant. Oh,
that's obviously when Will was there, aged like 7 or 8, might not remember it.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. So you've got the two managers. You've got obviously Wally and Ardy. So for your experience, I mean, has there been a particular manager that you've got on best with, throughout your career? Is there someone you sort of like? It's like your favorite, if you like, or the the person you'd like to work with the most.
I feel like you enjoy each manager for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
What Wally was a character, and it could be quite old school at times, and a lot of things that he'd done like used to galvanize the group together, because it was just a complete new way of dealing with things. So it was, all the managers, like, for different reasons, obviously, like Ards, like, gave me my debut and, helped me progress through to being an established first team player. Robbo, who'd coached me over the years and obviously had that technical side of the game. Wally was a character. I think just you kind of just enjoy different aspects of every manager, really.
I love it when people say, well, someone was so-and-so was a character, because we've heard the stories. So did anyone get tied to the roof of a car? Were their clothes being burnt? What was happening here? Come on, what was the...
Wally Downs is known as the originator of the Crazy Gang, so I can't imagine he would have been.
I just
want you all to sit down and discuss this carefully, and we'll
I'll be honest.
Where do we play those?
I'm happy to open up, but at the end of my career, I'm not like.
Yeah, still
this time I'm going to leave on a cliffhanger. There's just certain things that are just like so far fetched. But like, it was brilliant, but it was like,
but they happened, and they were happened. Like
crazy gang. They definitely brought the crazy gang.
Hey, you've got to save some stuff for the book, surely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, like some brilliant stories that like one day I'd love to open up about.
And I'm guessing, I'm not going to go into this too much, but I'm guessing things didn't work out so well with Jackson.
Obviously, like it's one of them. I don't like hold, you know, any grudge, or he's in a position where he has to make decisions. And like I said earlier, the club needed a change. And, you know, like if I look back and I think to, you know, the squad, probably the 20 or 22 man squad we had at the end of the season, just before we come in. So a month before we come in, if I asked you, tell me how many players are there from that 22 man squad. Go on, have a guess. You can all have a guess.
I'm guessing zero.
Yeah. Spot on.
Yeah, I'm thinking none. Yeah.
Zero. And it was, you know, it was, I look back at the time and I think obviously I had that first season under him and, you know, we started the season brilliantly. I say brilliantly. We was obviously in and around the playoffs and then we had the tail off around Christmas. But I do think there was a bit of a hangover in terms of the club, like where we'd been. And I just think if it was just me, maybe I'll take it a bit more personally. But it was, you know, he's in a position where he has to make decisions. And I think it wasn't just the playing side of things that had to change at the time. There was a lot of different factors that did change that have improved the club. You know, like we used to eat in the, you know, that Woody's pub at the end of it, at the end of training. And, you know, like all fun and games really, but you're looking around people having pints and, you know, I understand like it happened back in the day, like where, but like we're in obviously a new era now. And like the first thing they did, or one of the first things they did, you know, brought in a chef, his name's Albert, and, you know, he like top class. I think he used to work for England and like all these like little things, the little percentages where they worked on like touching up the training ground, the pitches, and obviously changed the playing staff. I think they just gave a fresh vamp to it that it needed. And, yeah, like I don't look back at it and I don't take anything personally because he, like I said, he was in a position to make decisions and And I think I just want the best for the club. Like it was obviously sad for me moving on, but at the same time, like I am a fan deep down of the club. So whatever was the right thing for the club is what I wanted truly.
Oh, well, that's lovely, mate. That's very nice for you to hear. But can I let's get selfish for a minute. What's next for Will Nightingale? What's your next move? You've got this wonderful testimonial, which we'll be at. We're excited to see you there.
Yeah, I think just wait to see what opportunities open up for me, to be honest. So I think the hardest part about the last 2 years is that I've been away from my two kids. My little girl, who's 4, and my little boy, who turns 2 the day after my testimonial. And when I came up to Scotland, he was 7 weeks old. And so the fact he's now turning 2, like, you know, obviously I've come up here for them. And like you guys, you probably all do it for your families. And that's a lot of people's driving force. And that is mine. I've had to remind myself over the years over the last 2 years, especially, that's what I'm doing this for. I've probably abused that, the fact that I've probably flown back, you know, so many times. I've probably not abused the opportunity, but I have flown back a heck of a lot because I do miss them. And we had the conversation about them coming up. But it was, they've got better, my partner's got better, she's got better support base, like with our families nearby. We just got Nelly into a school that we worked hard to get her into. And so it was one of them. Initially, I only came up here for 6 months as well to see if I liked it. So they've ended up staying there. So I'm looking forward to hopefully moving back closer to home. But yeah, just wait to see what opportunities open up, really.
Oh, I'm sure there'll be something.
Everybody around southern England, Will Nightingale is around. We can all vouch for him being a thoroughly decent bloke, and you know, therefore take the punt. Will Nightingale, definitely.
I think Zach and Femmel would say, hit him up on WhatsApp.
Hit me up on WhatsApp. That's it. That's the one.
I've got Will's number, so any agents out there want to hit Will up, I can definitely pass it on, no problem.
Yeah. And Niall's commission is really cheap. What are you, 50-60%, something like that? Will, mate, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us. We are privileged, and it's been an honour for us because we've seen your journey. We've been very lucky to see your journey all the way through, and that that goal at Bolton will live with us forever. So we're really honoured that you've come and joined us. So thank you so much, and thanks for everything. And we're looking forward to getting you down for the testimonial. Remind us, the date again is...
1st of June.
1st of June, down at Plough Lane. We will look forward to seeing you there. And you've got some brilliant talent coming along as well. Very exciting.
No, thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. It's easy to just, you know, speak about Wimbledon because you just speak from the heart. So it's I really appreciate you guys having me on.
An absolute pleasure.
To our dear listener and everybody else, come along to the testimonial. It will be the players that Will's got in are like the legends of AFC Wimbledon eras. They are absolutely, the lineup looks fantastic. I just think it will be an amazing day. It will be a complete hoot. I just think it'll be brilliant. Really, really, really looking forward to it. And Will, thank you so much both for your time as a coming on, but like everything you've done for being involved with the club, from coming through all those eras. I mean, you know, I think it's absolutely brilliant. And thank you so much for coming on and responding to crazy WhatsApp from a loony person like me. So thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it. It's brilliant.
Thanks, guys.
And thanks for the exclusive as well. We're going to live on that for a while now. So
So there's still probably about another 15, 20, maybe more than 20 names to be announced, but that'll just be getting stagnated.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you've just given us one. Thanks. Thanks, Will. Now you've spoiled it all, to be honest with you. Right. Thank you so much. Dear listener, thanks for listening. Thanks to my friend, Niall Cooper, for getting Will in. Thank you to our wonderful producer, Adam Proctor, our Wimbledon guru, Mark Lewis, and our wonderful, wonderful special guest, Captain Will Nightingale. We are the Same Old Wombles. We're back.